My baby won't sleep in the cold, cold ground. She's a zombie now. Oh, when the moon comes up and the sun goes down, she's a zombie now.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
...2008. The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. Enter a brave group of Jedi, led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi!
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Trek The Next Generation. I'm kidding, Star Wars The Clone Wars! In this episode, Count Dooku is determined to have revenge against the Nice Sisters of Dathomir after the betrayal. General Grievous launches an all-out droid attack against the magic-wielding witches, and Mother Talzin and Asajj Ventress lead the defense with all the dark powers at their command. There will be the return of Grievous, so Chris is happy. Close on one chapter in an army of the undead. We're talking about Massacre this week. How you doing, Chris?
Live long and prosper.
Yeah.
I like the Bugs Bunny pronunciation of Massacre, which is Massacre. And this one is a Massacre.
You know, I knew somebody who used to call it a Massacre.
A Massacre.
And, like, they thought that a massacre and whatever they thought a massacre was were actually two different things. So, like,
a massacre is the stuff that women put on their eyes.
That's mascara.
Oh.
But, yeah, and then so we had to explain to him. And I was like, no, like, this is massacre. There's no other. It's not massacre. It's not massacre. It's kind of like macabre. This is like macabre or whatever people think it's called, or macabre.
Whatever, I like it when people have pronunciations like that.
Yeah. I mean, it's like either potato, potato, but it's when he said it, it was wrong. I was like, no, it's not a mass acre. That's not even, but okay.
I mean,
massacre.
Logically, yeah, if you're sounding it out, it is, yeah.
Massacre. Massacre. Extra bleu. Sacre bleu. Ha! So, at my grocery store, there's a little Chinese restaurant that's, like, right next door. And slowly, over the last year, the lights on their sign has, like, gone out, like, different orders one by one, and they haven't replaced it. So, it's Golden Palace, but for a while there, it was Palace. So it was like Go Leche 2. It was Golden Palace 2. And then it was Go 2. And then they fixed the C. So now it's Che 2.
Oh, jeez.
So every time I arrive, I'm just like, what is it going to be this time?
Well, I just fixed one letter.
Yeah, but now it's just C, E, and then the Roman numeral for 2. So it's Che 2. So I'm just waiting for it all to be out, and I'm just like, guys, you need to fix your sign. I can't see what it is at night anymore, but for a while it was gotcha too. So I had a sad realization after last week's episode.
What's that?
I didn't realize it until later in the week after we had recorded, but Crisis on Naboo was Cad Bane's last appearance.
Ever?
Well, he would have appeared in Season 7 of Clone Wars, but it never got made. So there's pictures, and Dave Filoni has talked about it, and it's his arc training Boba Fett, and at the end of that arc, the two of them have a shootout. And so that would have been Season 7, and it's still considered canon, but since it never got made, that was Cad Bane's last appearance, and I completely forgot about it. I know. I mean, it wasn't the
last
appearance
so far.
Yeah, I really have hope for whatever the hell the Boba Fett movie is, that maybe he'll, like, pop up and just be like, hey, I'm here, and I'll be like, yes. Well, technically he's had another appearance because he was in the Darth Maul comics. So, yeah. Which was awesome. I never thought I would like Darth Maul, but Rebels really helped me really, really just love that character. Now I'm just like, yes, yes, give me Maul. Because I never liked him before Rebels, and now I'm just like, you're such a tragically terrible character, and you're kind of an asshole, but you're also a cockroach, and you just keep popping up places, but I love you now. So
he's a real character now.
Yeah, he's not just like, hey, I'm here, and then it's not like in, even in Clone Wars, I was just like, ugh, you have spider legs, how did you survive? I don't understand. And then he kept going crazy, and then he did some terrible things, and I was just like, ugh. And, but it was like, I like everything that we saw was like Maul was in action. I feel like Rebels for the first time tackled the emotional side of the character. And I was like, oh my God, like I understand you now. Like you have like feelings and regrets and I feel sorry for you. And then I had a moment I was like, damn it, I feel sorry for Darth Maul. Damn it.
That's what they're paid to do, Hope.
Yeah, those assholes. You know, there's a Twitter account for Dave Filoni's hat.
That's kind of sad.
Somebody made a Twitter account for Dave Filoni's hat.
What kind of hat is it? Is it? It's a fedora, isn't it?
It's that big hat that he always wears.
Yeah.
But it has like a cute tagline like, at the head of Star Wars or something.
Oh, jeez.
It is just like pictures of Dave Filoni's hat. It's a great little account for like a day. And then you're just like, okay, I'm done. But yeah, it's a really funny account.
Maybe we should do a Dave Filoni's hat podcast.
It would be a very short one episode. 1 10-minute episode.
No, we'll trace like, you know, the origins of felt, and we'll look at every aspect of his hat, the brim, the band.
Oh my God.
The fine silk in the label.
I will listen. You can do it.
We can pull it off, Hope.
We'll figure something out. And
we'll
like how
just put plenty of tangents in there.
We'll give it sentience, and it's actually, that's like where Dave Filoni's secret powers are kept, and it keeps all his powers under one thing.
Right, it'll turn into this postmodern sort of speculative podcast. About Dave
Filoni's actually
head.
like a parasite that's
we'll
latched to his head.
We'll figure out how to divine information from pictures of his hat that we'll get from the hat Twitter, and then we'll use that to answer people's questions on a call-in show. You know, there's all sorts of possibilities. We can use it as a host or a sounding board for a series of stories of the unknown and mysterious.
Yeah, Dave Filoni's
I'm drinking Dr. Pepper tonight, Hope.
Dave Filoni's hat has a like one tweet and it says, I tip myself to you, Dave Filoni. Oh, wait, this is a different one. Okay, so now there are at least two.
Okay, yeah, now one of them is a hat sock puppet account.
I'm Dave Filoni's hat sock puppet.
Which one's the official, you know... What do they call that on Twitter when you're real?
You just get the blue check mark.
Yeah, which hat has a blue check mark? That's what I want to know.
Neither of them right now.
Oh boy, the scandal that's a brewing.
Well, are you ready to get started on this episode?
I am.
I'm gonna ask.
I like this one before you even asked me.
I figure you would.
You warned me that I was gonna like it, but boy, I liked it more than I even thought. Just by going, oh, Greavy and Ventress and zombies, but yeah.
Yeah, it was a good episode for us. I mean, this is gonna come out weeks later, but the day that we're recording is the day before Halloween.
I know. I was thinking about that.
Yeah,
how perfect is that?
So the happy Halloween, guys! Even though you're hearing this like 3 weeks later. So, happy post-Halloween. It's tomorrow. I get to hand out candy tomorrow. I'm so excited. It's one of my favorite things to do at work. The mall I work at, they do a safe treat where the kids can go store to store and get candy. And it's like my absolute favorite thing to do all year. And
I wish we were both short enough to pass ourselves off as kids in ghost costumes. so we could have done a special episode where we both went out trick-or-treating as ghosts and we could use some of our Halloween candy on the show. That would have been fun.
Yeah.
I'll never pass myself off as a kid, though.
You'd be like, this is really good makeup, and I'm actually two children standing on top of each other.
I have a coworker. If he put a ghost thing on, he could pass as like a 10-year-old kid or 8-year-old kid, maybe.
My coworker Monet, she actually just looks young to the, and she's 19, but to the point where sometimes when she goes to restaurants with her family, they bring her kids menus because she looks like she's 10.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I would be I would be exploiting the hell out of that and getting myself some candy. Tomorrow.
Well, the funny thing is that like people have gotten concerned for her before because she has tattoos and you can clearly see her tattoos and people think that she's a child and they're like, why would your parents let you do this to yourself? And she's like, I'm 19, I'm about to go into the Air Force.
Because my parents can't tell me jack shit right now.
Yeah, I mean, so
well, wait till she gets back from the Air Force, then she could just like pick him up and chuck him across the room and say, there. Yeah. Little kid chuck you across the room like that?
Yeah, I'm so proud of her. She's about to start basic training. I'm super proud of her. She's my babe. So, all right, let's get started with the episode. Massacre is the 85th episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars, and it aired on February 24th, 2012. It was written by Katie Lucas and directed by Stuart Lee. Some extra information for you. The graveyard of the Night Sisters is meant to represent the trees found in the forest. The actual structures are built from branches, bones, animal skins, and shells. The Night Sisters hang their mummified dead in a pod of animal skins that resemble the pods hanging from the living trees. Also, longtime Clone Wars viewers will recognize the defoliator tanks, an experimental vehicle first seen in Defenders of the Peace, aka the Lehrman episodes that you hate, back in the first season. Yeah, there was the little fire thing in the Lehrman episode that they had to like run away from, and then Commander Bly almost died, and Ayla Secura swung down and saved her boyfriend. It was great. And then I cried, because then he shot her in the back. No, but that we're not there yet.
I'm trying to think of what out of those last few lines, what to lead into sexy Yoda with.
Yoda, I heard kind of a joke for you.
Mm.
So I was watching Game Grumps, and they were talking about going down on a girl.
Yeah.
And and they were saying that, you know, one trick you could do is with your tongue spell the alphabet. And finally, they went, actually, you only really need three letters. B-L-E. Blah-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. That's the only letters you need. Blah-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la.
Yoda's alphabet has 420 characters.
Oh my god, that would take forever.
Mm-hmm.
There'd be a point where a book would come out, or like, I would just start listening to podcasts, and... Just read, or like turn on like the TV, because that would just take forever.
Yoda heard Gettysburg Address. Spell out Gettysburg Address.
Oh my, you know, maybe like
an, not just an, words. Gettysburg Address, whole Gettysburg Address.
Maybe like an Emily Dickinson poem. I said Dick, but it's like. It's like a very small, like, or even like a haiku. We'll just do like a haiku, you know?
Four score and 7 years ago.
No, just a haiku.
Four score. Actually, usually only two score. But Yoda is open to four score.
Yeah, they could be having a threesome, and if you have three or more people with their shoes off, it's an orgy.
If Yoda's in threesome, it's more like 2.5-some.
I was about to make the exact same joke. Alright, what's the platitude this week, Yoda?
One must let go of the past to hold on to the future. In bed!
You know, okay, two things about
this platitude. I think that's a handy joke.
Yeah. Two things about this platitude. One, it's funny with the embed. Two, you know, for it's such like a hopeful platitude compared to such a dark episode.
Right, right.
It like it weirdly doesn't work as a platitude because the episode is just so dark.
That does this platitude does not describe the like if somebody put their arm around Asajj Ventress after the end of this episode and said just like you gotta let go of the past to get a hold to hold on.
She would have stabbed them in the throat.
She would bisect them on the spot. So and she would be pretty justified in doing that. It's So it's once again the platitude kind of falls flat on its own, but is a little better in bed.
Yeah, only everything's a little better in bed.
Of course.
Yeah, I mean, everything's a little better. I mean, come on.
It's like peanut butter and chocolate.
Yeah. Yeah, but, yeah. Yeah, we're just, like, curling up with, like, our kitties, and you're just like, it's cold, and you're hugging them, and they're just like, oh, God, feed me! Why are you touching me? And I'm like, my kitties! And they scratch you. Okay, maybe that's not good in bed. My cats have been dicks lately, and I have one on each hand, and they've scratched me in the last week, but in the stupidest way possible. Because when I use my laptop, usually my kitty Spokes sits beside me and she sleeps beside me. But I have a mouse for my laptop. And all she did was stretch. And one of her claws just went, like right across my hand. And I was just like, ow! Ow, you bitch! And then yesterday, My kitty Carmilla was sitting in my lap, and she was sleeping in my lap. I was working on my computer, and I reached down to pet her right as she was stretching, and one of her claws went across my other hand and was just like, kitty! And I was just like, what the fuck, guys?
Time for some kitty mittens is what it sounds like.
Yeah. All right. Act one's kind of short. Let's go. Act one.
Let's go.
Asajj Ventress has no choice but to return home to Dathomir after she flew around for a while and had to think about life. Mother Talzin greets her like, so, how did the assassination attempt go? Ventress sighs heavily. Well, Savage Opress has turned on me and tried to kill me, so that sucks. And Dooku is alive, so that sucks even more. I'm all alone. I'm all alone. No one beside me. And Mother Talisman is like, you're alive and you got your sisters. We got this. You got this. I believe in you. And she only said it in a really dark, creepy voice. So, yeah. She goes on to tell Ventress to give up on being a Sith, give up on the Clone Wars, and live on Dathomir with her sisters, free from everything to become a Night Sister. Meanwhile, Dooku meets with Grievous for one reason only. Grievous is to go to Dathomir, kill Ventress, and wipe out the Night Sisters. And Grievous is like, yes, I finally get to do something cooler than fighting Jar Jar Binks. Yes. That's the end of Act 1.
That's but it was like 7 minutes
of the episode, though.
Yeah. Of course, you know, I'm very happy that Grievous, Ventress, and the Night Sisters are all getting together.
Yeah.
But did this have the shot in it where Grievy's walking back to his ship and the droid's alongside him and has to, like, jog beside him?
I think, it was in somewhere in the episode, yeah.
That's my only other note on this part. I love that scene. He looks like Grievy's little helper. He looks like his personal assistant who has to jog, you know, has to take two steps to keep up with each of Grievy's ones, and he's just like, running beside him. I just thought that was a great flunky shot.
Yeah, I will say, because it doesn't come up at all, something I really, really wish was, eventually, I think it's next act, we get zombie Night Sisters, and I really wanted some kind of droid line of like, living undead, or zombies, or like, don't let them eat my brains, you don't have a brain, none of us have brains, like, I was like really wanting some kind of droid commentary throughout this, and
I don't think the droids know the difference, you know, it's that they probably think they're just other humans, like, or, you know, other biologicals, even though they're not. I don't know how droids, if droids, like, comprehend, like, the supernatural, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or whatever's going on here.
Yeah, I just wanted something, you know, like, there was no droid banter at all in this episode. And I guess, like, if you know, it was a very dark and emotional episode, so I can understand why they didn't do it. But
yeah,
I wanted,
there's not a lot of space for, oh, no, this one.
One line. Even if it was just at the beginning, like, Master, slow down. I have to run after you. Like, just something. Because I just love those droids. Though, speaking of droids, and this is way off topic. So I'm still reading from a certain point of view because I'm in the middle of the fucking million. The cantina section of this book is so long. Like, they have, like, six short stories from different cantina aliens in this. And it's one of those things I'm like, okay, please stop rehashing the exact same 5 minutes from different points of view. I don't fucking care anymore. But the interesting one was the bartender that was just like, no droids are allowed in here. They actually explained why he doesn't like droids. And he lived during the Clone Wars. And his family was killed by commando droids.
Scott Gardner and I sort of had that conversation of why, like, by the Star Wars era, people just don't like droids. Because they were usually shooting them, like, 20 years earlier, you know.
Yeah. And the cool part about it was, before the commando droids could kill him, two Jedi arrived and destroyed them. And so he remembered the Jedi saving his life. So when he saw old Ben Kenobi pull out his lightsaber, he realized that this hermit that he's known for years is actually a Jedi. And he talked about how, like, when the stormtroopers came in and they were looking for the droids and stuff like that, he had a choice. And he was just like, well, I could tell them, you know, about Luke and old Ben. And then he realized, he's like, no, because those Jedi saved my life, I'm not going to tell them. And he chose not to tell them. And I thought that was a really cool, like, Clone Wars tie-in that they put into the book. And that was just such a good scene.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I think all those authors were like, can I write a story from the cantina?
You know, I think I'm on the fifth or sixth one. And really, yeah, all I needed was the bartender, Greedo, and the band. I really enjoyed the band story. I think it was Robert Bell. I was talking with Robert Bell on Twitter, and he wasn't a big, or on Facebook, he wasn't a big fan of the band story. I actually really liked it because there was a lot of great commentary about Jabba that was hilarious to me. But after that, I didn't need the rest of them.
Right.
I'm like the fifth fucking story of the cantina, and I'm just...
You don't need to know what's going on with Hammerhead and all that, yeah.
Yeah, I'm on the mouse creature, like the little mouse creature that was at the bar. I'm on her story. And the only reason I care is because it's the story written by Matt Fraction. And I love Matt Fraction. He's one of my favorite comic book artists, or comic book writers. I love his work. But at the same time, I'm just like, Matt, I know what you could do. You could have done so much better than the fucking mouse of the cantina. I don't care. Matt, why? I can't wait, but I have a feeling once I know there's a bunch of stories for the Rebel fighters too, and I just know I'm going to get to the Battle of Yavin, and it's just going to be like 12 stories of the different fighters. I'm like, I don't care.
right. Oh,
I don't
God,
care.
You're right.
Yeah, get me to, like, the Tarkin story. That's going to be good, because it was written by Pablo Hidalgo. But it's still a really, really interesting book, because it's still going through A New Hope, just from the point of view of the background characters. But I really did enjoy the band, because there's
if you look up old episodes of Star Wars Tales, there was a bunch of short stories about the band that are really good.
Yeah.
And they were done by a cartoonist who is normally an underground cartoonist. So they're more of a funky, cartoony sort of art style. But they're really good. It's like a real band story. You know, they actually have the problems of a real band, but they're just in Star Wars. And they're all kind of doofy.
That's kind of how this one was. Cause
maybe they might have worked it into that being, you know, the template for it.
Yeah, it's kind of funny.
Max Rebo Band, that's it, the Max Rebo Band.
Like, when it starts out, they're like, so our band leader came to us and said that we had this great gig in a palace and we were going to make a lot of money. Lie number one, the palace was Jabba the Hutt. Lie number two, he sold us into slavery. Lie number three, the huge amounts of money was actually the money he owed Jabba the Hutt. So we were sold into servitude. And it was talking about how, like, they can differentiate sounds, and that's why they work so well together, because they can hear sounds either together or separately. And so they could play their music and listen in on conversations at the same time. So they ended up picking up dirt on people, and to help pay off their debt, they would sell information and dirt to Jabba to pay off their debt faster. And so eventually there was a great line of, well, finally Jabba let us go. And by let us go, he dropped us into the desert in the middle of the night. But we weren't going to say no, so we walked our butts back to Mos Eisley. And my other favorite part was they actually had a retraction. And they're like, they were talking about Jabba, and they're like, they said some kind of, like, nasty thing about him, like, you know, something about a giant slug. And then there's a retraction of, by the time this was published, Jabba the Hutt was killed by an unknown assassin, but the band wanted to keep that tidbit in because they felt safe now. It was really well done. I really enjoyed the band story. So, yeah, except for when they got the cantina and I didn't care anymore again. Anyway, my notes, back to the episode. I just thought it was cool talking about droids, that's why the barkeeper hated droids, and I thought it was a really cool Clone Wars tie-in. Yeah, we were just talking about Dario for our 100th episode, and we were talking about how, like, Clone Wars, like, made the prequels better, and Star Wars Explained has a video, and it's the entire Star Wars canon in one video. It's about a 20-minute-long video. And it's really good because it's from the very beginning through The Force Awakens, because they're going to release one every May 4th with the updated stuff on it. So it doesn't have, like, any of Star Wars season 4, it doesn't have Rebel season 4 in it, and it won't have Last Jedi in it because he made this before those came out. But it's interesting because seeing it from beginning to end, it works in of, like, how the prequel stuff happened, and it put in Clone Wars, and then it had Rebels, and then it had the original trilogy, and, like, the in-between. And it was really cool watching how this new canon was actually laced together in chronological order, and it was just really nice to see.
I see.
Yeah, I would highly recommend it. It's, like, 20 minutes. It was a really cool little video, so... Anyway, back to my actual notes. So, I like the little bit in the beginning where Mother Talzin is talking to Ventress, and Ventress was all like, Savage betrayed me. And Talzin was like, oh no, I'm sorry. But we know that Savage has already gone back to Mother Talzin, and Mother Talzin was like, do my bidding. Go find your brother, Darth Maul. So, like, it's fun watching, like, because you don't know what her end game is, and you have this feeling that she's playing both Savage and Ventress, but you don't know how she's playing them or why. So it's just really cool to see her, like, not telling Ventress the whole truth of, like, oh yeah, he came back to me. He's looking for his brother. You're fine.
Someone like Mother Talzin, everything is a secret. She's, it's sort of Dark Yoda-like. She knows the bigger picture more than everybody else.
Mm-hmm. But I really liked that because they were talking about it. I was like, ooh, Talzin, you're not telling her the truth. And the other thing I was just wondering is Talzin tells Ventress, you know, and you'll finally become a Night Sister. So is Night Sister a title? Because I thought they were born into it.
Bet you you're born into potentially being one, but there's got to be some, for anything like that, there's got to be some sort of rite of passage. You know what I mean?
And so what I was thinking is, like, we know that Ventress was taken away as a baby, and so maybe she just never truly learned all of their ways, and I think that's what she meant, because, you know, they have a village that's full of Night Sisters, and so I guess maybe when you reach a certain age, you become, like, a full Night Sister, but even if you're, like, 12 and not of age yet, you're still considered part of the Night Sister clan.
Well, as we'll see in the next part, you might just have to, you might not be a Night Sister till you take a dip in the well that, like...
The Well of Darkness?
That actually combines you with all the different Night Sisters. That's sort of the impression I got, you know, when you get into that, you're sort of tainted with another level of connection to the dark forces of the Night Sisters.
Yeah, but that's all I had for Act One.
Let's get into the what I consider the hot part of the show, the episode.
Yeah. Act 2. It's time for Ventress's dark baptism.
Oh, yeah.
Talzin's all like, "Do you pledge yourself to the Ya-Ya Sisterhood forever and always? Praise be to Voldemort!" And as Ventress accepts the ways of the Night Sisters, Talzin does some of her dark magics, and Ventress comes out with a brand new outfit. It's true, she went in with one outfit and came out with a new outfit. I was just like, wow, 'tis the season for shopping. Everyone's shopping this season. Now, it's true, because the clones got their Phase 2 armor this season, too. So far, Ventress, Cad Bane, and the clones all have new outfits. So, I love it. Now she's officially a Night Sister, and they will party like it's 1999 before Yavin. But uh-oh, Grievous's ships arrive on their planet. The first wave scatter the Night Sisters, and the Clone Wars have arrived on Dathomir. Ventress knows that it's her fault that Grievous is here, but she has no time to mope. A droid destroys a pillar and drops it on one of her sisters. She dies from it, and Ventress is pissed off. She's ready to go out there and watch the world burn. Mother Talzin does some Final Fantasy shit and fries a bunch of droids with dark lightning magic. Ventress knows that they'll need more people to fight Grievous. Talzin will talk to someone named Old Daka to get help while Ventress buys them some time. Ventress leads her sisters into the attack. Grievous sends the second wave of some tanks. Meanwhile, Talzin goes to a hidden cave and finds Old Daka, the oldest and wisest of the Night Sisters. Daka begins to chant and resurrects the dead to aid Ventress. A green light shoots out into the forest where pods in the trees aren't actually pods. They're burial. They're pods with dead people in them, with mummified Night Sisters. The dead rise up, screaming and ready to fight. Back on the front lines, the droids shoot out the defoliator cannon. I meant to say cannon, not camp. Shoots off the defoliator cannon to burn the forest. The army of the undead arrives. They swarm the battlefield, and Ventress gets a hold of a tank to blast down the other tanks. With the tide of battle turning, Talzin can finally deal with Dooku. What'd you think of Act 2?
I think Burial is very similar to Rural for Hope.
Yeah, I you know, it's never a word that's ever...
Just call Burial. Them like coffin cocoons or something.
Burial. I can say it now. I just couldn't say it in the process of reading it. Burial.
Burial?
Burial. Ariel. Burial, your Ariel. Fish of the sea. Burial.
Well, can I just say the Night Sister baptism? For me, personally, Chris Honeywell, I think this might be the hottest moment in Clone Wars. It's not quite Mala level. But I have to say, I wouldn't mind attending a Night Sister's baptism.
Really? What is it about the baptism, Chris?
It's just a bunch of hot Night Sisters plunging someone into red-hot lava in mini shorts. Come on. Croft shorts.
I didn't put it in my notes, but it reminded me of like the 1999 Brendan Fraser Mummy, because it always had like the moving dark water and like spirits would like rise out of the water and you would sink into it and stuff. And so like when she sunk into that black water, she was gone. And so that's what it reminded me of. But you can find hotness in it. You can find hotness.
I don't know. It pushed my buttons. Lucas's daughter. It's funny. It looks like they like are like, okay, you're writing all the Night Sister related stories. She writes very non Star Wars, more like fantasy fiction stories, but they work out in the context that they've carved out for them. And I like her episodes a lot. I probably shouldn't. I probably should be just the opposite, but I like all the fantasy elements of it because they put it in its own sort of context within Star Wars. And then in this one, you have the crossing over of that weird non-Jedi Sith context and the Clone Wars when, you know, Grievous touches down and now all of a sudden those two realities are crossing together. I like that a lot.
Yeah, like it's a little over the top when Mother Talzin like raises up in an orb and shoots out lightning, but at the same time it's cool because they use the dark side of the Force, so it's sort of like Sith lightning, but it's not.
Yeah,
Yeah, and another thing that I found was really funny is that about, like, portraying a matriarchal society in, like, a PG-13 kids cartoon, it's like, you don't even want to approach the sexuality. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because at the celebration after, during the celebration, it's like, and they're all dancing. How do you portray that with a matriarchal society? Do they dance with each other? Well, that would be a little too, like, might be a little too frisky. So it's all these women just sort of standing around, aimed in different directions, doing that, like, you know, twisty hand. I'm actually doing it behind my microphone, where, you know, the hands are above the head, doing the little like snake charmer dance, and they're all just sort of doing that, like, drunk girl in the club all by herself dance.
You know, I wonder how it would be if it came out now in a time where we have a movie like Wonder Woman, because, you know, Thaumascara was all women. So I wonder if they would have approached it differently if this episode was made nowadays.
I don't know. Yeah, because they're sort of the dark version of that. But even Wonder Woman isn't, you know, it's there wasn't like a scene where she sat down and goes, Diana, we're all daughters of Lesbos here, you know. So, but I mean, when you have a society like that, if they're going to have any kind of sexuality. Well, actually, no, I shouldn't say that with the Night Sisters, because they've got cities full of men off in the distance. So, you know, we don't know how it goes, but that, you know.
I still, to this day, want to know how their mating rituals work. And, like,
I do, too.
I want to know.
But I hope they go like the baptisms, basically. All right, what else do I have? Oh, the scene where she releases the dead, where that first scene where you see, like, the white cloudy energy thing coming out, and it's all made of screaming skulls, and the music in that is a combination of some of the other stuff from the prequel, but it had a little bit of Raiders of the Lost Ark in it. The scene at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark when all the screaming faces were coming out of the Ark, and it has a sort of like sort of theme going through it. And I was like, that's nice. They just did a little subtle hint of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
For half a second, I thought you were about to go, ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba.
Gene!
I thought you were about to say that. Hear that, Gene?
It's hard to describe, but it's this descending. It's this stuttery descending quick progression of notes, and it just sort of it's very similar to one in Raiders of the Lost Ark when a very similar scene is happening, and I think they were definitely trying to evoke that, and it was kind of neat visually. This episode is right up my alley, you know. It's lots of reds because we're on Dathomir, but there's all, like, it's red, but then every, you know, like the energy beams and lasers and stuff are all different colors, and the clouds of ghosts, there's just all sorts of cool things going on. There's lots of, like, greens and neon greens and reds and blues all, like, over red. It's lurid. I love it. I'm loving it. That's about all my notes I got for this part.
What'd you think of the mummy?
They're great. They were very, I like how they would do, like, a little shambling, stuttering start, and then they would just take off running.
But just sometimes screaming and running.
Screaming and running, and sometimes their heads would be lolling loose on top of their... When that was happening, that's when I was going, like, oh, my God, this is a great episode to do to record the day before Halloween. You know, it's total Halloween images. And not only that, but, you know, they're mummies, but they're kind of ghost mummies, too. So they've got...
They have, like, the green mist coming out of their
eyes. They've got mist, and their heads are glowing and stuff. And then you think about it, and you're like, oh, these are dead Night Sisters, and they're just, like, coming back from the dead and probably thinking, oh, somebody's after our sisters. It's so good to be alive. Now we can just kill people.
Yeah.
Why do you rouse me from the dead? Oh, to kill people. Yes.
And they have those banshee screams.
And it's not often that, and I don't know if this is necessarily feminist, but it's not very often you see a running, like in Lord of the Rings, those are all guys in that army. This is a whole army of screaming zombie women. That's something you don't think you've ever seen before.
Yeah, the closest thing we have is the Tom Cruise mummy, and I hear it's bad.
I hear it's really, yeah.
Yeah, I guess, you know, going back to the Brendan Fraser mummy.
I still haven't seen that yet either.
Oh, it's so campy. Like, it's...
I hear it's a lot of fun. It's great fun.
Don't go into it thinking it's scary, because it's more of a campy adventure romp.
Yeah, it's more like the Raiders of the Lost Ark with zombies, basically, it sounds like.
Yeah, and so, for one, you should see it, just because it's just a really, really fun movie. For number two, it's been on my mind a lot recently, because ever since the Tom Cruise mummy, like, there's been this, like, revitalization of the Brendan Fraser one, and so, like, it's been coming up on, like, Tumblr a lot, and then very recently I watched the Nostalgia Critic go through it again, and so, like, it's been on my mind. So I forgot that there was a female mummy, because the whole point of the actual mummy is Imhotep, which is the bad guy, the mummy, was having an affair with the pharaoh's mistress, and they assassinated the pharaoh, and they were going to perform this dark curse to live forever, but they were caught and mummified alive. And so, like, that's the beginning, the opening scene of the movie. And so there is a female mummy in that, but outside of that, you're right. Like, there's not – the mummies are almost always men.
Yeah, when you usually see an army of the dead, it's an army of men. Because usually, I mean, traditionally armies are men. But, you know, I mean, the only thing that would really, like, sort of play along with this, too, would be, like, once again, Wonder Woman. Like the Amazons or something. That's where you see an army of women. I'm sure in, like, fantasy literature, you know, and sword and sorcery literature, I'm sure there's been... like Amazonian, you know, matriarchal societies with armies and stuff that happen, but in just sort of modern context, especially in visual, like movies or TV, yeah, I've never seen a whole army of lady zombies, and they did not.
I'm happy they didn't, like, sexify them.
That's what I'm saying. They didn't think about them as lady zombies. They didn't give them, like, flopping breasts or anything like that. Well, that would be like in a horror movie or something, not in a PG-13 Star Wars, but like made them especially like feminine. You know what I mean? The only thing feminine about them was they had their Night Sister clothes on and their voices were like sort of like harpy, you know, like they were higher pitched zombie noises. But otherwise, they were they were savage. They just, like, set upon things and just started destroying them. So it was just really neat to see.
Yeah, that was definitely one of my notes. Like, I remember this episode, like, because I'm not a big horror person in general. So, like, the first time, like, one flopped out of the pod and, like, lifted up, I was just like, oh God. Like, this episode, like, creeped me out the first time I saw it. And, like, you know, now I know what they look like, so they don't freak me out anymore.
Meanwhile, I'm sitting here just like, yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, but I do remember the first time, like, they scared the crap out of me. Because a lot of it was like, you know, I never think in the realm of Star Wars, which is a sci-fi fantasy space opera, that we're going to have fucking zombies come out of nowhere. And we kind of got that a little bit with the Geonosians, but, you know, like, they're bug creatures and they have, like, this hive mind and stuff. But, like, this is, like, dark magic voodoo zombies, which is something I just never thought would be in the realm of Star Wars. So it really took me by surprise the first time I ever saw them.
And it shouldn't work, and it works
so well, and it's because of all the work they've done setting up this Night Sister Society. Because, like, I would say, like, if you didn't have the previous episodes and this was a standalone, it wouldn't work. But, like, we have all this with the Night Sisters. We know that they can do this dark magic. We know that they can do these, like, supernatural things, and it's just another side of the Force. And so it works so well in the context that they've set it up, and I love those zombies. It really is a great episode for us the day before Halloween.
I agree.
So some of my other notes, I started noticing, like, when Grievous's fleet was arriving, there's a lot of droids. Like, they send a fleet of droids. And
Dooku knows who he's up against.
And that's crazy. And so, like, while they never say it, it's a really good nonverbal way to show how much Grievous and Dooku truly fear Ventress, Talzin, and the Night Sisters.
I'm surprised they didn't get the... you know, the other Darth Mauls and their town full of Darth Mauls to join in on this.
You know, I started thinking about it because I had sort of that note, something similar to it in the third act. But then I remembered back in the Night Sister episode that they live on the other side of the planet. So they probably just couldn't get there fast enough, or because pretty much Grievous arrived and they were like, oh, God, yeah, we have to fight. So
yep,
they probably just didn't
right
have
in the
enough
middle
time
of their party.
Yeah, so, I mean, I thought about that, too, but it would have also been really cool to see the men show up to fight. Like, that would have been really, really awesome. Because, as I said in our Night Sisters first arc, I was like, I need to know more about these men. I want to know all about them. I need to know about their society. And I still do, guys. I still do. I really want to know. But, yeah, like, that was just such a cool way to be like, yeah, Dooku and Grievous know exactly who they're up against. Let's send a fleet. So something I just think is really cool is we know that the Night Sisters are not good guys by any means, but because we've been following Ventress for so many seasons, you can't help but to root for her and her people in this fight. Because there's really
I don't even think of them as that bad. I kind of like them, even though their method, that, you know, they've done some sketchy things in the past. They're sort of like doing their own thing, and like if you don't run afoul of them, you don't really have much to worry about. They're not out actively trying to be malignant in the universe, or they're doing their own Night Sister thing, and just
you
God
know,
help anybody who messes with them.
I was thinking about that earlier because, like, you know, pretty much Mother Talzin at the beginning of this episode was just like, you know what, Ventress, you don't need the Clone Wars, you don't need to be a Sith. You're alive and you have your sisters. And at the same time, on the other end, I was like, what is Dooku actually fighting them for? Like, does he fear them that much that he is just like, you know what? I'm going to put aside the Clone Wars for like a day and just go fight the Night Sisters. Like,
Ventress is a loose end, basically, and could probably be detrimental to Palpatine's plan. So that's probably why she's going off, getting wiped off the map, or they want her wiped off the map.
You know, though Mother Talzin could have just called Dooku and be like, you know what, bygones be bygones, and Dooku would just probably still be like, nah, I'm just gonna kill you guys.
Yep, bad idea.
Though, it's not a spoiler for the new Rebels episode, but they kind of touched on that a little bit in this week's Rebels. And also, I was watching some Star Wars Explained videos, and they were talking about, like, what would have happened on Mon Cala and stuff. And the Empire was purposely trying to erase alien races, and that's one of the reasons they built the Death Star. And, like, for example, one of the planets that was going to be targeted was the Mon Cala planet, to wipe them off the map. And so I could see this just being like an early run of them just going, you know what, these Night Sisters, they're not people, just massacre them.
Let's just like get rid of any potential future problems with them. Yep.
Yeah, and just anything that's not human, we're just gonna kill. And so I just, yeah, maybe this is just an early version of that. So my last note is I really do like seeing the dark side of the Force through necromancy. This is the first time we've really seen that, and it makes me wonder if we'll ever get to see necromancy again in Star Wars.
Well, maybe not necromancy, but we'll get to see some dark Force that's non-Sith, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I was wondering what that would probably look like. If we did see, like, necromancy specifically, like, where might we see it? Like, would we ever see another race kind of like the Night Sisters, do you think?
Yeah, it's possible.
All the
males are
still
there. I think a lot of it's going to depend on what happens in The Last Jedi.
Yeah. So I was thinking about that. I was thinking about that in Rebels, of how cool would it be if they came across, like, because we saw Zeb's people, and the Lasats use the light side of the Force differently from the Jedi, and they have their own kind of magical way of using the light side of the Force. So I was just like, I think it'd be really cool to see another race like the Night Sisters one day in the future, and being them being kind of similar but also kind of different, and they're not Sith or anything.
I mean, we've already sort of seen the remnants of the Night Sisters in Rebels.
We have?
Yeah, don't they go back to that pool?
Pool. Oh, you're right. You're mm-hmm. right, because they go to Maul's cave on Dathomir, don't they?
Yes, and there's all the souls of the Night Sisters are still in that pool.
I forgot about that. Yeah. And that happened.
Old Chris's memory isn't too bad anymore.
Yeah, I totally forgot about that. And we also get it in Dark Disciple, because Ventress brings Quinlan Vos to her world to train. And so we got a lot more of the Night Sister stuff there. You're right, I forgot about that. So, but I just think it'd be cool to see like another race like the Night Sisters.
Yeah.
The return of Dark Mortis. Mortis, but at the dark side of the Force. Oh, God, no. But that's all I have for Act 2.
All right, you ready to get to the violence?
The violence that's already there. Yes.
Yeah, but this is the best violence for me.
All right, Act 3. Talzin has a lock of Dooku's hair and makes a voodoo doll out of it. In his palace, Dooku's forehead starts to blister and bubble. He realizes it's Mother Talzin messing with him. Ventress has reached Grievous's ship and races across the battlefield towards it. Grievous comes out to greet her, and they banter a little bit like the good old days. But this isn't the good old days, and Ventress makes a deal with them to fight. If she wins, Grievous leaves. If he wins, the Night Sisters will surrender. Finally, Chris is happy because Grievous gets to fight! He goes one-on-one with Ventress. We get a quick scene of Talzin voodoo torturing Dooku. Anyway, back to the awesome fight. Ventress and Grievous are evenly matched, but she gets the upper hand on him. He orders his droids to kill her, making the fight break out again. The Night Sisters and zombies rush in to help. Ventress gets hit in the shoulder. Before Grievous can kill her, the undead swarm him. Luca, one of the Night Sisters, grabs Ventress and get her out of there. But Luca gets shot in the back and tells Ventress to run before she dies too. Ventress flees into the woods. Dooku squeaks out a call to Grievous to follow the green mist to Mother Talzin and eliminate her before she kills him. Mother Talzin's spirit bursts out of Dooku's chest like an alien, demanding Dooku to call off his army. Dooku pulls a never! And Talzin's like, "Welp, I guess I have to torture you to death." Grievous cuts his way through waves and waves of Night Sisters until he finds the hidden cave. Maybe it's not the best idea to have a vapor trail of magic that leads the enemies to you. They blast through the walls, revealing Talzin and old Daka. When Daka is killed, the army of the undead doesn't have anyone controlling them. They fall to the ground, leaving the rest of the Night Sisters exposed and outnumbered. The Night Sisters are easily massacred, just like the episode title says. Talzin escapes in a plume of mist. Grievous knocks over her spell, freeing Count Dooku from the curse. The Battle of Dathomir is over. Ventress is hurt and falls in the woods. Mother Talzin comes to her in the mist. The ghost is like, "Well, that didn't go as well as we planned. Look, I know you're blaming yourself, and you brought the war to our people, and got all your sisters killed. But look on the bright side. You can follow whatever destiny you want. Okay, bye!" And she leaves a distraught Ventress alone with no direction or drive on what to do.
Yeah, she floats away sort of like Glinda the Good Witch, just like, "Bye!"
Well, you did it. Bye. It's your fault.
I just realized this when you were reading your description, and that I didn't realize during the show. But there's a total echo to episode one here, where when they kill old Daka and the zombies just fall down useless without somebody controlling her, is totally just like when Anakin shot out the droid control ship in episode one.
Yeah, that happened in actually the last Grievous episode with the Gungans. They turned off like the one ship and all of them were disabled, and that's how they captured Grievous.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they shouldn't have like a one kill switch for all the droids.
This part is so colorful. It's just neon colors. I love it. And I don't think words can express how much I love Dooku voodoo.
I love Vuku. At the end of it, like when he's free, he just like puts his head on a bar and just goes, "Oh."
Well, yeah. Oh man, I mean, for one, it's funny because Dooku is just such a stooge, and he always presents him. He his name, and you know, he's based on, you know, a famous actor who's always a badass.
And he looks like a chess piece.
And he's all regal and stuff, but he gets chumped a lot. And it's just great to see somebody else who's sort of in his peer group, like Mother Talzin, is a super, you know, dark side of the Force wielder, to watch her just punk the hell out of him. I mean, he's done. He's just like basically can just lay there and squirm in pain. And the scene where she comes up out of his chest and is just taunting him, and when he's just, you know, he's playing tough, and she's just like, okay, and right back into his chest. I mean, you can feel his, that she's making that an agonizing situation, you know. She's ripping out of his chest. It's fantastic. I love it.
I also love, like, when the bubbles first form on his head and he, like, falls over and starts grabbing his head and screaming, his droids are just standing there watching.
Well, yeah, they're just like, oh, whatever. Something that humans do.
It's not like they'd be like, oh, maybe we should go get a doctor. No, they're just standing there.
Yeah, you could go swab some medicine on him, but that ain't going to help that much. Yeah. Maybe they should get a doctor, but it wouldn't help much. But, yeah, maybe the droids should be programmed to be like, are you having a heart attack, sir? Is the left side of your chest, is the left side of your body going numb? You may be having a stroke.
Oh my god, they go from, like, killer bots to Baymax in, like, 3 seconds. That'd be great.
Count Dooku is having a stroke.
What's a stroke? I don't know. Maybe it's when they stroke oil on our joints and they just start pouring oil. They start pouring oil on Dooku, and he's just like, no!
Yeah. Here, boss, have some oil. Yeah, that would have been great and totally inappropriate in the show, but great. You and I would have appreciated it.
He starts crushing everything in the room.
And then at the end, when she finally releases him, an oily Dooku gets up from his laying on the ground and just looks over at the droids as the oil drips down his face. Uh-oh.
And the next shot is them flying out the window.
Sorry, boss.
I'm sorry.
But that's all I had on this. I just had a great time with this last part. Was just all, you know, come on. Greevy fighting Ventress. Greevy, like, zombies climbing all, just climbing up him, and he's just chucking him down on the, oh, it's just awesome.
I like the one where, like, he snapped its neck and threw it on the ground, but it still, like, its head was moving, and he had to still stab it in the head.
Yeah, it was basically, yeah, but you'd see him destroy the zombies, and if you looked in the background and off to the side, the zombies would just sort of put themselves back together and start shambling around again.
Yeah.
You know, until they got turned off, they were pretty, you could knock them down, but they would probably, like, climb around, grab their head, pop it back onto their spinal column, and keep ripping.
Yeah, they were just such a good thing. Well, my notes are, Ventress babe, you've worked with Grievous for a very long time. You should know that he cheats and does anything to win, and he has no moral code, so you can't make a deal with him because he's going to backstab you. And look what he did. The moment he got thrown down, he was like, kill her!
and the thing is, and she feels guilty. She obviously feels guilty for being the one that they followed here to slaughter her sisters, but at the same time she feels very comfortable, like, bargaining with their fate with Grievous, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, if she loses, they all lose too, and you know, they're
it makes me wonder if she had, like, a backup plan, like, if he had started getting the upper hand,
maybe she did know that he cheats, and she was planning on cheating too, and this was just like the opening, you know, lines. And
yeah. And so I know that Mother Talzin can't kill Dooku because he's in episode 3. But if they had that freedom, she should have just, like, ripped off his head right away and been done with it.
Oh, yeah. She should have just, like, lopped the head off that little wax Dooku a long time ago, for sure. But yeah. Then again, that's why I'm saying they're not really as evil as they, you know, she could have lopped him off, but she was probably like, I'd be interfering in stuff that's not even my, you know. yeah, or whatever. But yeah,
but that just always goes back to like one criticism I have of the show, which is with like the legacy characters or the Legends characters and stuff like that. Like, you know that they're not gonna die. Like, you know that Obi-Wan and Anakin will always be okay and stuff like that, which is makes me like wish like sometimes they created like more characters to have someone like right now in Dooku's place, where Mother Talzin could have been like, "Bye, boy," and like ripped his head off. Yeah. And so like, what? Imagine if we had like a character from season one, and he was kind of a Dooku like character, and like we've been with him for four seasons, and out of nowhere, Mother Talzin kills him. Like, that would have been like such a shock factor. So like, that's just still like something to this day. Like, you watch this episode, you know that Dooku's not gonna die. It's fun to watch him get tortured, but like, there's no suspense. Like, you know that he's not gonna die. That's still just like something that bugs me at times with Clone Wars, because there's times when like there's not suspense, and I guess the suspense is like how they get out of situations to survive. But still, it's still just a bugaboo of mine.
Yeah. It's something you can't really avoid because you got all these canon characters.
Yeah, it's a bugaboo, and I've said it before, and I know I'm probably going to say it.
You just like saying
again.
Bugaboo.
I do like saying bugaboo, a bugbear. Anyway. Well, I do love what they do with Ventress. We talked a little bit about it in the first Night Sisters episode, that they didn't even have to focus on Ventress at all. Like, they could have never fleshed out a character. They didn't have to give her a backstory, and they didn't have to show us her world, but they did it, and they fleshed her out so beautifully. And now we're getting to see her at a brand new low, with no people to turn to, no allies, and no directions. So it's so much fun. It goes back to what I was just saying. Like, we have a character that was created for Clone Wars, and so now the fun is, like, what will Ventress do next? Like, this is a new beginning. Like, what's going to happen to her? Yeah, and so, like, that's what makes her so much fun to watch, opposed to someone like Dooku, who we know is always going to survive. But that's what makes Ventress more fun, because we don't know what's going to happen. Well, I know, because I've seen all Clone Wars. But when I was watching it, like, I was like, oh my god, what's going to happen now? She has nowhere to go, oh my god!
Oh yeah, she could very end up with one of Grievous' lightsabers through her by the end of this episode.
Yeah, like, she's the one character that you're just like, you don't know if she's going to survive. So, like I said, I've seen all of Ventress' story. What do you think will happen to Ventress? You'll know as
she's
soon as
kinda
next.
Like, she's kind of like, well, I don't want to say kind of like Maul, but she definitely has potential for redemption, you know? And she also has a grudge against the separatist
side. She had a grudge before. Now she has a major grudge.
Right. So she could either be redeemed into a more light-sided sort of thing, although it's doubtful because she's basically comes from Sith and the Dark Sisters, Night Sisters, Dark Sisters, Darksiders. But she could definitely become like a grudging ally for the you know, the Obi-Wan Anakin side of things. I could definitely see an episode where she and Obi-Wan actually work together, you know, work together on a common cause against somebody. So that's what I see for her. She has no real, you know, she really has no real reason to be a foil to Obi-Wan and Anakin anymore, you know. She's more of a foil to Grievous now.
Yeah, so. I can see that. I think that those are really good guesses.
Excellent.
Well, I won't tell you if you're right or wrong.
Thank you.
And I promise you, you'll start seeing the beginning of it next week.
Excellent.
So, next week is the Ventress episode, so. So, okay, here's my Night Brother question. Here we go. So Dathomir was sort of a matriarchy ruled by Mother Talzin, right? So does that mean that now all the Night Brothers are free in Savage's village? Because there's two ways this could go. One, they were fiercely loyal to the Night Sisters. So what's keeping them from going out for revenge? Or are they like, woo, we're free? Yeah, let's do this. Because it's never addressed. and we never, like, see them again. And I just want to know what happens to them now.
Yeah, I know. If I were Ventress, I would have gone and found them and say, look, you guys are the last of our, you know, the last hope, and train them into her anti-Grievous army, you know?
Yeah.
That army full of Darth Mauls? Yeah, they could do some damage.
Yeah. So
there
like
would be a good Marauder horde.
So to be real honest, like that's my one gripe about all of the Night Sister stuff, all the Night Sister episodes and everything about their culture and stuff like that. Because we get teased about the Night Brothers, and we know Savage and Maul came from them and stuff like that. So they have the potential to be like really cool characters, and mm-hmm. then we saw like the structure of their village compared to the Night Sisters and stuff like that. And I'm just like, but what happens to them? What happens? I need to know these things. That's probably my biggest gripe.
I know, like, 2 years, a year down the line, are they going to be like, are they going to be dropping off the yearly food supply like they usually do? Ever heard from them?
Yeah, like, you know.
Do their water bowls fall, you know, dry out and they all die?
Is there, or are their populations starting to start declining because now there's no girls?
Like, do they turn into a completely, like, gay community, you know, and you go there and it's like Pride Day, you know?
I'd be so down for that. Like, Savage returns and they're all just like, hey! And he's just like, oh, God!
Welcome to our society!
And they become like the most like peaceful, productive society in the galaxy until they all die out because there's no women.
Once they're free of the Night Sisters' influence.
Yeah, like Ventress has a baby, and just like every dystopian society, it's gonna be named Hope, and she's like the future of the Night Sisters and Brothers. I don't know.
They start learning science and cloning each other.
Yeah, then
so
you
they
have
can
like
have children, and
then the clones are like, oh, they're like our brothers now. Yeah, like that's, I have to say that's probably my one biggest gripe of all the Night Sister stuff is we got teased with the Zabark brothers and we just never go back to them and there's no resolution to it and we don't know what happens to them. Like that's probably like my biggest gripe of it. And even though that's not a big gripe because everything is so good in all these episodes. So it's more of a like a wishful thinking thing.
Yeah.
The only other thing I kind of wish from this episode is like the fighting is all so great and it's such a good battle, but I wish they would have clipped like, you know, a minute from it to put towards the end just to have like Ventress a little bit more of just like dealing with like, oh my God, I'm alone. My sisters are massacred. I'm the last one. And what am I going to do? Just to kind of flesh that out just a touch more. Like I didn't need much, like maybe 30 seconds to a minute.
Well,
just like a tiny gripe.
You're saying the next episode is a Ventress-centric episode, so maybe they were like, well, let's just leave it, drop it at this, and then we can start dealing with that in the next episode or something.
Yeah,
and
like,
you have something to flesh out
like,
in that.
I could have even liked, like, 10 seconds of, like, Grievous and his troops pull out, and, like, Ventress just walks out into the battlefield and just sees her sisters.
Right.
I didn't need a lot. I just wanted like a tiny little bit, like maybe 30 seconds.
Or Ventress just starts the process of putting all her sisters into those cocoons to hang onto the trees.
Yeah.
Before she can leave or something.
Yeah, because pretty much Mother Talzin's like, well, this is your fault. Have a happy beginning.
Well,
bye.
Remember, Mother Talzin was when she was like, I feel so bad. And Mother Talzin's just probably sitting there going, I don't feel too bad. I'm lying to you, too, you know. So Mother Talzin's got a bigger picture in her head, you know. I always picture the Mother Talzin or the even older woman and the Yodas as having, when you're that powerful in the Force, you have the bigger picture, so there's a lot of things you're like, yeah, I know we're getting ready to they might not know exactly what's going to happen, and maybe it's never really like specifically exactly determined what's going to happen, but they probably know like, it's time for another chapter is coming in our, you know, life where this, so that, you know, they're working on another level than Ventress. So she wasn't losing much sleep over, like, Ventress led the Separatists and Grievous to her. She was just like, yeah, I don't feel bad about it, you know?
Yeah.
It wasn't in her radar as something, you know. She was basically saying, yeah, get over your self-interest, you know, in some ways.
No, I now that you brought her up, I would have liked to see maybe like in a past episode a little bit more of old Daka, because
I like that they just pull her out. It's just like, here's the oldest.
She lives in a cave.
It's great to have things that are not explained and just come out of nowhere. You know, that's part of the joy of Star Wars. It's like, oh, all of a sudden we've got like, and when they mention her, then you're automatically thinking, ooh, I wonder what she looks like, you know?
Yeah, but she was cool. So I kind of wish like either like, I don't know, I just, a little bit, or maybe even like
I like that
reference.
Old Daka didn't mess around with it. Usually when you go to, you know, a character like Old Daka and go, you know, you have to mess around with who disturbs Old Daka, and then Old Daka goes, why would I want to bring the army of the dead? For Old Daka was just like, what, there's trouble? Boom, let me start the chant. And no messing around, you know, the Night Sisters are when they have to act, they are in, you know, in sync with each other.
Yeah, I think it would have been cool like in an earlier episode, like maybe mention her, so when we finally got to see her this time, it'd be like, oh nice, because just she was such a cool character. So like I just something just to kind of build that suspense maybe. Yeah. Like a little bit more.
I just love that it comes out of nowhere and all of a sudden we're seeing it. I love that.
But that's all I have, so write up the episode, Chris.
All right. I love this episode. This might end up in my top 10. I'm giving it a 9. 9 Ooh. Out of 10. It's colorful, fast-paced, and I mean, not to talk down the episodes, I love these weirdo episodes when they work, you know. I always end up grading them higher because when you take something that shouldn't work and make it work within Star Wars, it automatically puts a whole like fresh flavor to it when you're watching it. So it has more of a feeling of, I don't know what's going to happen next. And it's bright and colorful, Grievous wheezing around in it. And it's just a wonderful episode.
How did you like Grievous in this episode?
He was okay. Everybody knows I love Grievous. But he wasn't the focus of this episode, you know. But he did get to fight around. I mean, all he's good for is either running away, grumping around, or fighting. So we got a little, not really much grumping around or running away, but we got him, you know, battling for a good amount of this episode of these 22 minutes. So I'm happy with that, you know.
You got Grievous swarmed by zombies.
But I was more interested in the Night Sisters aspect of this episode. And that's another thing that says good things about it too, is I wasn't focused solely on Grievy and be like, come on, I want some more Grievy. I was just like really happy to have him in there. But I love the Night Sisters story aspect of it the most. That was what I was focused on.
You said a 9 out of 10?
9 out of 10.
Well, for me, this is a really great episode. It's fun to have Grievous back in all his glory. And the Night Sister zombies are just so creepy and monstrous. And we get to see Talzin keeping information from Ventress about Savage's betrayal. And it's just a beautiful and dark battle. It's just so bright and colorful. And it's just a fantastic episode, all like, and it just completes the tragic end of the Night Sisters, and it's just so good. And I actually bumped up my score. I have a point because
I saw that happening.
Yeah, because I didn't think about the whole like not having female mummies, and like I never thought about that, so that bumped it up a little bit more. So I gave it an 8.5 out of 10.
I love it. They're mummies and they're zombies.
Yeah. So it was a good one. Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, or the Two True Freaks Facebook page, especially on iTunes, because when you rate and review the show on iTunes, it helps more people find the show. So if you like us, leave us a compliment or a review on iTunes, or if you don't like us, let us know what you don't like, and direct it at Chris. So this week, our feedback comes from the Two True Freaks Facebook page for our episode, Escape from Kadavo.
All right, the first one comes from Robert Bell. It's short and sweet. He says, I really do hate how often Dooku and Anakin fought in Clone Wars.
And I mentioned that I think it was last week's episode, because I remember reading this comment, and I thought we already had this comment, but it was just I had read it. So this is the comment I was referring to an episode or two ago.
I don't hate it. It's okay with me. Theoretically, I should hate it, but the way they handled it, and when I think of it in the context of his fight with him in episode 3, I kind of like it, because... There's one of these, I think it might have, there was one of these episodes where they fought Dooku, and Obi-Wan was there, and, you know, Obi-Wan sort of gives direction to Anakin like he does in episode 3, where he's like, okay, you know, you take the right flank, I'll take the left flank, and they go in and battle with Dooku, and they don't defeat, you know, it, of course, in Clone Wars, they're never going to, nobody's going to defeat anybody. It's just going to be a, you know, a scuffle, and maybe one will come out on top for a while, but nobody's going to get killed in it. But, you know, in these scuffles with Dooku, Anakin's picking up his fighting style, and by the time we get to episode 3, and Obi-Wan is just, you know, like, okay, we'll do this, and this is how we'll take down Dooku, and Anakin's just like, screw that. It gives Anakin in episode 3 a little more confidence, instead of being just impulsive and being like, no, I want to fight him now. It's a more seasoned Anakin who's like, you know what, I don't need Obi-Wan. I'm just gonna go in and polish off Dooku for good now, and he does. So it doesn't bother me as much. That's at least how I shore it up in my mind.
For me, it was the Obi-Wan undercover episode, the last one where Anakin fought Dooku and Palpatine was there, and that's when I talked about it some. So the fort back in that episode. So just to shorten it up, I feel like it's Palpatine is constantly putting them together because he is seeing who the better potential Sith Lord is. And as much as he like super duper duper wants Anakin, I think there's still a tiny little shred in the back of Dooku's mind that says, or the back of Palpatine's mind that says, if Dooku bests Anakin, then he's the better Sith Lord. But I think he's still like, you know, 99.9% believes in Anakin. So that's what I kind of like about it, because it's, to me, I see it now more as Dooku and Anakin doesn't realize it, but they're kind of battling out for Palpatine's affection to be the next Sith Lord.
Right, they're already on the stage fighting. And Aaron Henley sort of weighed in next on Robert Bell's statement and said, well, the main reason for that being why Dooku and Anakin fought so much in Clone Wars was that due to episode 3 lines of Grievous and Anakin first coming face-to-face, the writers were stuck. You want your main hero to face the main villain, but since you can't fight Palpatine or Grievous and Asajj is now off the table, who else is there? And then Robert Bell replied, this is why it's great having these on Facebook, because it goes back and forth. Robert Bell replied, create someone different, I guess, which is, damn it, I like that answer, because that's an answer I say all the time to people. And it's just a good franchise answer in general, you know, when... with the Star Trek TV shows and Star Wars movies and stuff constantly referring back to themselves and characters that are in there, I'm always thinking to myself, why not? You don't have to always grab somebody from the story. You can make somebody new, and then you even add more to the canon of it if you get new compelling characters and they're added into it instead of constantly having the same characters always meeting up with each other. So I always agree with that statement.
You know, for about that answer, I think it depends on who that somebody is. Like, if it's somebody like, say, I'm going to use Rebels as an example. Rebels is a really good example. From the beginning, they had the problem of the Inquisitors. Season 1, we had the Grand Inquisitor, and he was there for... Actually, Callus is a kind of another good example. We had Callus and the Inquisitors, and the Grand Inquisitor, and they were the bad guys. And then we lost the Grand Inquisitor at the end of Season 1, but we knew that there was an Inquisitor program, so it totally made sense when the fifth brother and the seventh sister showed up. because they were still part of the whole Grand Inquisitor thing. And so they were villains created from the beginning, and they were always there. Well, then they all died off, and we didn't have a big bad anymore, which gave us Thrawn. And so with Thrawn, he came in season 3, and in the course of Rebels, he came in really late, so he had to be a powerhouse from the get-go. And I think that's kind of a problem sometimes, is like, Ventress would have been a good choice, but like Aaron said, she's now off the table. You can't really use her. So if they brought in a villain now, season 4, he needs to be like Thrawn. Like, he has to be a powerhouse from the get-go. And I think that's kind of hard to do 4 seasons in. I think Maul and Savage is that kind of potential. Like, they're the next powerhouse that's, like, waiting to come in and stuff like that. But I think that's the problem, is unless they had created someone from the beginning, like season 1, to still be here in season 4 to be like another Dooku, but they didn't do that. And so that leaves some very limited options of like Ventress, Grievous, or Dooku. Well, Grievous is there, Ventress is on the table, so pretty much the only person they really can fight is Dooku. And Dooku is kind of the main villain outside of Palpatine. Like, Dooku is the head of the Separatists. It makes sense that they're going to go after him the most, because he is the head of their enemy, because right. They don't know Palpatine's there.
Basically, the Jedi think that Dooku, they think Grievous is Dooku, and they think Dooku is Palpatine.
Yeah, because Dooku is the only Sith Lord that
right.
they know about.
Right.
They know there has to be another one out
They're one step off from the truth. So.
Yeah. And I don't think they actually believe that Grievous is a Sith Lord, but they do know that there's another one out there. But to them, Dooku is the Sith Lord that they know about. So it makes sense that they're constantly fighting him, to me.
All right, we got one from Paul C. Kelly, and it said, "What would Anakin and Obi-Wan do without the Wolf Pack? Awesome Rex kill." I'm assuming he's talking about the chair.
Yeah.
And the trident. He needed to let all that bottled up Umbara anger come out. Yes, he did. And then he's got the NWO Wolfpack theme with no crowd noise.
Which I had to add, because I thought that was funny. So we didn't decide our candy again.
I know. I was just going to say, I'll just rustle around my candy bowl here. What do you want to do today? Do you want to do a big candy or a little candy?
The one I wanted to try was the Oreo one, because I think I've had this one before, because I ate something very similar to it a few weeks ago.
There's been so many kind of Oreo candy things that they've experimented with. I don't know if I've had something like this, but I love any kind of Oreo candy, so I'm right with you. I'm opening up mine right now.
I had this recently, but I just want to see how it tastes different coming from Portugal.
It says Milka and Oreo from Portugal.
Yeah. Well, if you don't know, Chris is not a big fan of American Kit Kats, so our friend Dario is a flight attendant and Chris's co-podcaster for Eat It and Beat It, so Dario is the head of the Mile High Club. I'm just kidding. He's not. He has a wife and a child, and he's very loyal to them.
Yeah, but his wife is a flight attendant, too.
Oh, what if they're part of the Mile High Club together?
I cannot believe between myself and the Hair Metal Hero that we've never asked.
Oh my god, that's what I'm here for.
I'm gonna assume they are.
But he sends us candy from all over the world to review, and we're doing a Milka and Oreo from Portugal today. It smells sweet.
I'm eating mine already, it's delicious.
Mmm, I love things that are like cookies and cream that have little cookie bites in them.
It's what I expected. I expected a cookies and cream and chocolate sort of flavor, but it's really creamier than I thought. The cream is very distinct in it. It's good.
You know, I've had the American version of this, and the American version is not as rich. This is much richer.
And if you break off 2 pieces of it and tell me it doesn't look like a butt.
I'm eating butts.
Creamy, delicious butt. Thanks, Dario.
Thank you, Dario.
These are good.
They're really, really good. I love stuff like that. Well, that's all I have. Where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com, our powerhouse of a website that contains all the Two True Freaks podcasts, all of them. And we got all kinds. We just added, recently we've had Mike Zumo come in with a Superman podcast.
Oh, cool. Congratulations, Mike.
And we got them Jack and Eddie brothers doing podcasts. I'm assuming since there's a second season of Stranger Things coming out, we'll be having our Stranger Things podcast with, and I'm blanking on the name of it like an idiot because I just thought of it, but it's with Jonathan Kreitz and Dave Atterbury and the Hair Metal Hero. Cast Protection, that's it. Or it should be Cast Protection. A Dungeons & Dragons term. But they should be in Seventh Heaven because the whole second season of Stranger Things just dropped on Netflix, and I'm sure they're binging up on that. Let's see, we're on Twitter. We have a Twitter Two True Freaks page, which tells you what all podcasts are coming out. That's run by Gene, the podcasting machine.
Gene!
He said with his mouth full. And we got a Facebook page, a Two True Freaks Facebook page. And the Two True Freaks Facebook cantina. And that's where all the hardcore freaks hang out. We got about 600 people, 600 and so people on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. Probably about 20 or 30 of them that post. So if there's any more lurkers out there, come on. Come on, say something. Yeah, that's about it. Where can they find you, Hope?
You can find me on Twitter at Hope Mullinex. I also run our Twitter account, which is at JGuysAndJedi. It's been really fun recently. They're kind of weird because usually I live tweet Rebels, but with the new schedule, I never know, like, I don't want to spoil things for people. Like, there's a big thing that happened in tonight's episode, and I want to talk about it so much. But I can talk about it now, but not to you, because I didn't want to post about it on Twitter. And that's just because, you know, people haven't seen it yet. But I do, what's it called? Rebels GIF reactions on Tumblr, and I post those to my Twitter and to the J Guys and Jedi, which are a lot of fun, and I really enjoy doing them. And I'm kind of happy that they've been releasing the Rebels episodes earlier in the day, so I can get those done before I have to do all this. So, yeah, that's where you can find me. So, oh, and at whatthefangirl.com. Ha! Ah!
Yeah, you're there too. I was wondering when you were gonna say that.
No, I blanked. I got to thinking about something else. But yeah, I'm also the newsletter for What the Fangirl, but I've been really bad and I haven't been posting stuff a lot recently. And it's about to get worse because NaNoWriMo starts the day after tomorrow. So I'm about to write 50,000 words in a month. I'm not ready. I'm not ready this time.
Who's ever ready?
Well, the last two NaNoWriMos, because, well, the thing is, like, when I originally started writing my novel, it was one book. And right. I had about the first, like, half, very organized. It was outlined. I knew what it was going to do. And then as I started writing, about 300 pages in, I looked at my outline and I was like, oh, shit, I'm only a quarter of the way through my outline. So I was like, okay, I'm going to have to split this into two books. So book one is now the first half of the outline. It was very clearly outlined. I knew the beginning, the middle, the end. I knew where I was going to go. So the last two NaNoWriMos, because I did NaNoWriMo last year and then I did Camp NaNoWriMo over the summer. And so it was easy. I knew what I was writing. It was great. Well, now in the second book, which is the back half of the outline, is not clearly outlined. I had, like, I knew what the, like, the, I know what the ending is. And I know what the start is. I have no idea what the fuck to do in the middle. And so that's the part where I'm just like, I don't know what's gonna happen. It's gonna be a thing. And here we go. I don't know what to do. But I'll try. So yeah, it's gonna be an interesting November. Probably me screaming a lot and laying on the couch and wondering and questioning everything. And then, like, in the middle of the, like, I will be
Not unusual in writing. I mean, like, just think, just remember that, like, most of your favorite movies and TV shows and books were written in very similar fashion, with the author feeling the exact same thing.
Oh, I know. My ideas always come to me when I'm either driving or in the shower. So, like, usually, like, if an idea comes to me in the shower, I just, like, repeat it out loud over and over and over again. And then the moment I'm out, I grab my notebook and, like, I write everything down. Which is why I need to have, like, a board or something in my shower that won't wash away. That's what I really need in my life. But yeah, I'm a little bit
nervous. I think
just
a regular board with the permanent, you know, well, you get a little recorder and just set it on the sink next to the, you know, I mean, most days you'll just have the sound of, like, water running, but, you know, every once in a while you'll have water running and you going, oh, wait, and, you know, I mean, your family will get to hear you talking to yourself in the shower, but
I do
you
that
know, I'm
anyway.
Sure they're used to stuff like that anyway, right?
I'm a shower singer, so, yeah.
You can just sing all your ideas when you're in the shower. And
yeah.
Then at the end you can release an album of your books sung from the shower.
Yeah, but I'm a little bit nervous about NaNoWriMo this year because I know like point A, point B, point C, point D, and I know point X, point Y, X, Y, and Z, but I have no idea what the middle is. And I have like little snippets here and there, but nothing that's like connecting all the dots together. Yeah. So it's gonna be interesting. I'm a little bit nervous.
E through P is missing.
Pretty much, yeah. And it also didn't help like when I originally outlined my book. There were things that came up naturally. Like, I brought in, like, for example, I had these two characters that, like, happened, like, that I was like, I need to do something with you, too. So they ended up in a scene together, and then they, like, in my mind, they were like, oh, she's cute. I'm like, oh my god, you guys like each other! And I, like, never planned for them to be a couple. I was just like, oh god! And then on the other side of it, because it's a superhero novel, but there's other superhero, there's a superhero team per state. Each state has their own group of superheroes. And I introduced three of the characters from another state, and they ended up sticking, and I like them. And now one of them is one of the main characters of book two. When he wasn't originally, I never planned for him. And so I'm just like, you're here.
He was just some guy. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, what, you're here. What do I do with you? Why are you here? What are you doing? Go home. Go back to Maryland. We don't need you. And I'm like, but he's like, but I'm here for a reason. I'm like, okay, fine. You can stay. You can stay, Fareed. Stay. But I'll figure out something with you. So, like, I have these characters that, like, and, like, there was one character that, like, I sort of had her outlined. But as I actually started writing, like, I was able to flesh her out. And I was like, okay, cool. I have a thing with you now. But now you're here again. And I just have all my babies. And they're just, I don't know what to do with my babies. This must be what the Duggars feel like when they stare at their 20 children.
No.
That's true. They just call
the
church.
There's no link to art with the Duggars. Sorry.
That's true. I'll give you that. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting November with NaNoWriMo, but I don't have to worry about that yet. But happy Halloween, even though it's past you guys. Never mind. Happy Halloween, Chris.
I hope. Thank you. I hope everybody had a happy Halloween.
Oh, yeah, that's a much better thing. I hope everybody had a happy Halloween, and this is probably coming around right around Thanksgiving. So
yep.
Happy Thanksgiving, guys. Wow, is this, where are we? Maybe this is the Thanksgiving episode. It possibly could. Happy Black Friday, everybody.
Gobble, gobble.
I'm going to be working. Let's see, this 90, 94. So 91, 92. 93, 94. Yes, this would be the Thanksgiving episode, so happy Thanksgiving,
Turkey
everybody.
Turkey and pilgrims, everybody. Turkey and pilgrims.
You watch
Not
that.
Not zombies that. And night sisters.
Watch that parade. Oh, I'm going to miss the parade this year. That's like my, in the dock show. That's my favorite part. I have to go, I'm road tripping up to see some family, and then I have to turn around and drive right back for Black Thursday. So that will be a day.
Enjoy.
I will.
All you retail people out there, enjoy your hell. Enjoy yeah. your hell.
Thanks, guys. Thanks. Yeah.
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at twotruefreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
This is Kari Payton. I'm Ezekiel on The Walking Dead, and I love listening to Two True Freaks Network. I think maybe you should, too.